Welcome to the Fabulous Fempreneurship podcast series for women entrepreneurs. Each episode addresses topics to help you and your business succeed. Today we are talking about finding your communications voice. And our guest today is Rachel Brontreau, who is a business builder, a marketing strategist, and a vagipreneur. So welcome, Rachel, to our show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start out by hearing a little bit about you and your journey in entrepreneurship. If you could just let us know in a few words.
Sure. So I started out with large companies and I've gotten successively smaller in the sense that I've taken more and more control over my financial future. So I started out working for large companies like Johnson & Johnson. Then I worked for consultancies where I service clients like that. And 20 years ago, I started my own agency, consultancy, focusing on business growth and revenue growth. And in the middle of that 20-year period, I also raised a bunch of venture capital and built a company in the space of female sexual health. So mine was somewhat of a gradual move into entrepreneurship. But now I obviously, like many entrepreneurs, can't imagine doing anything else. I like being my own boss. I like being in charge of my financial future. I like having to be scrappy and sell my ideas and my business.
Well, yeah, that's true. You have to be all of that when you become an entrepreneur. I had a similar journey, but I haven't been an entrepreneur as long as you have. But it's very interesting because you have to wear many, many different hats. And so it isn't for everybody. But one of the important things is finding your own communication voice, because you don't have a great big corporation that's doing that for you. You have to find that yourself and work on that yourself. So if you could talk about that, what is a leadership voice?
So I usually start right there and I ask people, you know, what do you think a leadership voice is? And if they don't know, it's, you know, often because they don't have one. And I don't think I did either until necessity required it. So a leadership voice, in my view, is the way you present to the world, the way you communicate, the way you speak, the way you interact, the way you motivate people to be on your team and to support your ideas. So it's really all about how do you work with others so that you're all marching with a common beat towards the goal. And I found that the best sort of summary to describe that is your leadership voice. And that, again, is the way you communicate, the way you motivate, and the way you interact with people. And I'm often asked why it's important. And having been at this a long time, I've spoken to literally hundreds of entrepreneurs who have said that once they find their leadership voice, once they develop a communication style that is unique to them and authentic, although that word is overused, but really comes from them and isn't put on, that they do see more opportunities come to them because they see things like get into the conversation in an appropriate way. They get in the room. They're part of the promotion structure. They are taken more seriously when they spend time thinking about how they want to communicate and then practicing it. So the example that I always use is that you wouldn't go into a finance job or a marketing job or an accounting job without the fundamental skills you need to do any of those roles. And I argue that to be an entrepreneur and to be a leader, you also are not prepared unless you have a way that you are communicating to the world, sharing your ideas and generating enthusiasm.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And your authentic voice must be true to your brand and true to you. You can't be something that isn't, you're not comfortable with yourself, because you can't then be authentic all through your organization and all through your marketing and everything supporting your company. So that's a very important thing. I know, as you said, the word authentic is overused, but it really means being yourself. And so you have to, I think.
And it means being yourself and adapting your authentic self to the situation. When I think of entrepreneurship in large part is, and business in general, is you're always selling. You're selling your idea, you're selling your team, you're selling your concept, you're selling your leadership. And when I talk about authenticity, the example that I often use is, you know, if you're extremely introverted, you are not going to be the big, bold person at the front of the room. That's likely not going to be a style that's comfortable for you. So to translate authenticity is, does it feel right? Do I feel like I'm putting on a show or I'm acting in a play? Now, I want to separate that from, it doesn't mean your natural default is going to be the most effective leadership style for you. So if you happen to be introverted and if you're uncomfortable speaking in public, that's absolutely something on your path to find your leadership voice that I think you have to work on, because you do have to be comfortable with your content. You do have to be comfortable with your language. You do have to be comfortable leading a room, motivating a room, and getting things done.
Yes, and you can train yourself to have the confidence to do that. And that was the subject of our last podcast, is how you develop your confidence. Even people, celebrities, aren't confident all the time. And they've had to do the same thing. They've had to work on their voice. I mean, they might be a great singer, but they might be awful at doing interviews. So they have to work on that. They can still be their authentic self, but they have to work on skill sets just the same way we do.
Absolutely. And when I'm speaking to students, whether undergrad or business school students or speaking at corporations, I focus on three things that one can do, anybody can do, to help get them more comfortable with either understanding and unveiling or revealing what their communication voice is or discovering it. So the first thing is, since you mentioned celebrities, is look at people you admire, whether they're people you know that you're sitting next to at a business meeting or people you see in a movie or on TV. When I originally wrote about this topic, when I first started speaking about leadership voice, my title was Finding Your Leadership Voice, because Oprah's is already taken. So for me, I've always watched what she's done, and I try to analyze why I think it works. And so my people are Oprah and my dad, who I look to and say, how do they handle these situations? So looking at Oprah, one of the things that, and obviously she's spectacularly successful and has an interesting story, but one of the things that, many interesting stories, one of the things I credit her success to, from my perspective, is that she's able to match her content and her style to the circumstance that she's in. And by that I mean she's just as effective and real when she's opening up a school for girls in South Africa as she is speaking with a person who is revealing some personal pain they experienced in their life in on national TV. And she's just as comfortable doing that as she is, you know, going to John Travolta's birthday party or being with some celebrity.
Yes, and so, I mean, she really had to start somewhere. So she wasn't always that confident to do that, and she had to work her way up.
Exactly. So, you know, look at, find people you admire, whether they're people you have access to personally, whether they're people you can watch how they speak. We have every speech that anyone's ever given, written somewhere or online. You can watch people and really spend some time asking yourself and figuring out, what is it about this person's approach and leadership style that is so effective?
Yes.
And when I look at my dad,
So what I wanted to sort of put in there is, when you listen to Oprah, she's very relatable. And she connects to the emotion. And I think that's why we all feel that connection with Oprah. And she doesn't do it in a very natural way. She brings out the best in the people that she's interviewing, whether it's the president or, as you said, somebody with a very emotional story, or whether it's, as you say, opening the school in South Africa. She does it all so naturally, because I think she's a natural connector.
And I think you make a very good point. What's common across all those circumstances is the interpersonal, is the touching someone else's story and touching someone else's life and having what appears to be a genuine interest in the person or the people that she's sitting across from.
Yes.
The other person who I was able to observe much more closely is my dad, who was in business for 40 years and obviously my father for my entire life. And observing him and watching him interact, what strikes me or struck me about him, sadly he passed away about a year and a half ago, but his presence is just as great in terms of looking to him as a model, is he had this unbelievable way of making everybody feel important, regardless of what role you were playing in his life. So whether you were someone who worked for him, or he worked for you, or a friend, or a person in a store, whatever it was, he treated every person like they mattered. And he inspired so much loyalty from everybody that he interacted with. And it was it's quite a remarkable quality. I mean, now almost 2 years after he's gone, I still bump into people who say, oh, I worked with your dad 30 years ago. He was, you know, the best coach. He was the greatest support. He was a great listener. All these things that I had the chance to observe up close and personal that I've tried to bring into my leadership style.
So I think you hit the nail on the head right there when you said he was a good listener. And I think that's
absolutely
part of your leadership, to be in the present. And Oprah's a good listener too.
Yeah, and whether that's real or not, we assume it's real because she's so believable in every role that she has. So I assume I know Oprah because I've now seen her in a bunch of different situations. Mm-hmm. So the first one, just to summarize, is find people that you admire and really spend some time figuring out what it is that you admire about them. What are they doing that captures your attention? What are they doing want to be like them or follow? The second piece is to be quite honest with yourself and make a list, an actual physical list, of what your real strengths are. And the reason I focus on strengths is my experience is that women have no shortage of time finding the things that they do wrong, but that we spend much less time identifying the things that we do well. So what are the talents or skills or approaches or relationships, what are the things that you or I do that consistently create positive outcomes?
Yes.
So in my case, well, you know, my kids don't think I'm funny, but being able to, you know, insert some levity into a complicated situation, not in a way that's dismissive or disrespectful. You know, that's one of the things that I'm able to do casually. I remember names. I remember how people are connected. So for me, and I would suggest everybody else, make a list really of what you're good at. Now, I know people when they do this, I've done this with hundreds of people, they can't resist the urge to write what's negative. And my experience is you don't need to remind yourself of those. We women, you know, and obviously it's a big stereotype, but are often seen as having that, you know, negative tape in their head. And you know what? People are very quick to tell you what they don't like. So the reason I focus on the positive is you really need to understand what strengths you have, because often you take them for granted. I know for me, when something comes easily to me, I assume it's not hard. And over the course of talking about leadership over the past many years, I've tried to retrain myself to say, you know what? If you're good at it, it's a strength. And it might be easy for you. That doesn't mean it's easy, and it doesn't mean it's not an asset.
That's right. And then if you have trouble coming up with your own list, then talk to your colleagues and people that know you really well, and they'll come up with a list, and then you can reflect on that list.
And you want to do that with people that you really trust.
Yes.
Who have your best interests at heart and who know you.
Yes.
Who really know you. And then the last thing I suggest, so first identify someone or multiple people who you admire and spend some real time listening to them, observing them, and figuring out what's motivating about them. The second is doing an assessment of your own personal strengths. And finally, to me, it's the easiest one, but it's the one that most often gets forgotten. And that is practice. Whether you're looking into a mirror, whether you tape yourself on your phone, whether you practice with a friend or a coworker over coffee, if you are going into an important presentation where your success will be determined on your ability to motivate people, you want those words to have come out of your mouth many times before you do it in front of the person that matters. So when you think of an athlete, you know, athletes don't go in, and actors, people don't go into performance situations without practicing. So why would you go into a leadership situation without practicing? And I find that doing that over and over again, so doing it once, seeing how it feels, seeing how you like the language, seeing what your body language felt like, getting feedback from someone to say, you know, that worked, that wasn't believable, you know, you seem to get uncomfortable with the content here, whatever it is, actual specific feedback, and keep doing it until you're comfortable. Because many people, most people, get nervous in speaking in situations that matter. So yes, to the extent that you can, everything you personally can to reduce the stress and the likelihood that you'll be flustered or not present yourself or your content the way you want to, that practice really helps. And it becomes quite an iterative cycle. So you might, so between the identifying someone or people, doing an inventory of your own strengths and then practicing, you have the opportunity to do that every time you face a challenging situation. And I'm not suggesting that people have hours and days and months and can go on retreats to learn this. But I am suggesting that if you start with what's the next big thing you have coming up, see if you go through these three steps, feel better. See if the outcome was better. See if you got more of the response that you wanted, or the funds, or the team, or the access to somebody in the organization. And test it out, because it's one of those things, because it's so personal, you can constantly be improving it and you can constantly be iterating and seeing what works for you.
Yes, you bring up a good point, because why we need a leadership voice, and you mentioned some of the reasons why you need one. You have to be a fundraiser, you have to be talking to prospective clients, you have to showcase yourself at speaking events. There's an N number of reasons why you need a leadership voice of your own and communicate with everything that you need to do as an entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
So you had a unique situation because you were in an industry where you had to definitely find your own voice. Could you tell us about that?
Absolutely. So for about the past 10 years, I focused in large part on the business of female health, where a journalist called me this name and it stuck, and I trademarked it because I think it's descriptive and gets people's attention. And that's a vagipreneur, a person in the business of female health or female sexual health. So when I was first entering this business and I was trying to buy an asset that was a product that improved arousal, desire, and satisfaction for women of all ages and life stages, you know, it's exciting to talk about. It seemed like the holy grail of marketing, but then picture going into Silicon Valley in 2008 when the bottom is falling out of the financial market as a female entrepreneur, and we all know those statistics, talking about vaginas. So we had 13 appointments in 2 days. And for those listeners who haven't been to Silicon Valley, basically what it is it's just really a series of office buildings, one next to the other, where there are different venture capital funds. At least this part of Silicon Valley, Sand Hill Road. And each investment group believes from their perspective that they have a different approach. They have a different investment thesis. And your job is to figure out how to get them interested in your investment thesis. So again, we go in with three strikes. We're going in a recession. Even though we had run a successful consultancy for decades, we were seen as first-time entrepreneurs because we were coming in with a product idea. Mm-hmm. And the last piece is we were talking about vaginas. So we go into the first meeting, and the first question we get, you know, pretty predictable, is how is this product, which is called Zestra, how is this product different from Viagra? And so we gave a very scientific answer about how the male sexual response system works like a hydraulic pump, Viagra works as a vasodilator, increasing the blood flow, and so on and so on. And, you know, you could hear crickets. You know, their eyes glazed over. It is not that we hadn't answered the question, but we gave, you know, we're taking ourselves very seriously, as we should as business people, answering the question that they asked. Okay, so we leave the first meeting. We have 12 more to go. Suffice it to say, we didn't leave that meeting with, you know, the objective when you go into these first meetings is to have a follow-up. You know, that's really what you're hoping for.
Yeah.
So clearly the first one started, no follow-up. We go into the second one, and we had done some satisfaction research, and the question that we got was, what does this do for his satisfaction? And I went on to answer that we had done a 13-site, double-blind, placebo-controlled study that really was focused on her satisfaction. And anecdotally, what we believed is that the male partner, and this was done with heterosexual couples, that's what the research was done with, likely felt more satisfied because their partner enjoyed it more, and it gave them confidence that they were a better partner. That also didn't get much of a response. You know, I want to hear about the man's satisfaction, and you know, you're telling me about the woman's. And that is not to suggest that there's, you know, no men in Silicon Valley or no men in the rooms that we were in who are interested in what's good for women, but I'm just reporting what happened in the first two meetings. So I said to my business partner, you know, we have 11 more of these. At the rate we're going, you know, we're maybe going to find a quarter in the bathroom, and that's about all the money that we will be able to raise. So we really have to figure out a new approach. So just coincidentally, I run my whole life with credit cards. I'd like to be able to track things. You know, I'd like to know where the money went in my business and in my personal life. So I rarely have cash. And this particular day, for some reason, and I write it off to divine intervention, I had a $100 bill in my wallet. So I take the $100 bill out and I put it on the table in meeting number three. And I say, here's a $100 bill. If anyone makes a sexual innuendo that I haven't heard before, or a double entendre that makes me blush, or asks us a question about this category that we can't answer, this $100 is yours. And then I paused. And I said, she likes it more. She wants to have it more. Let's talk about the business model.
And so
all of a sudden, I've changed the entire dynamic and the energy and the interaction in the room, because I communicated, you know, knowingly or unknowingly, that I was serious, that I understood this business, that I had confidence in what I was talking about, that they might be embarrassed, but I certainly wasn't going to be embarrassed. And I was prepared to head on, respond, deliver, direct them to, you know, the answer to information, to what we had done to support our data points. And it was in that moment that I really had this epiphany, for lack of a better word, where I've now knowingly or unknowingly, as I said, in that moment, figured out how I'm going to be a leader and a communicator in this space.
Right. So it was just finding your own voice that spoke to the problem of raising the money, but you did it in a different way, out of the box way. And instead of just answering the questions from the potential investor. So this way you put them on attention. They you're doing something out of the box that drew their attention to you and made them listen, and therefore you probably had a better outcome.
And ultimately we were successful and raised, you know, millions of dollars. What's interesting about that, and because I referred to earlier how you should practice, and that you should never go into an important meeting the first time you're saying something. The reason I took the risk is we had 11 meetings, and I felt like I had a chance. If it worked, great. If it didn't, we could regroup between meeting 3 and 4 and practice something else.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a risky strategy if you have one shot at bat. We knew we had 13. That gave us a lot of room for error and learning and mistakes and improvements. And especially when you have a partner, you have to make sure that you're comfortable with the strategy. So I had tried a new leadership voice. I thought that my approach of being, you know, very buttoned up on the data, which I still have to be, really understanding the numbers, understanding the category, all the things you still have to be, I couldn't get their attention until I focused on something other than that. Because there was this big white elephant in the room. You know, we're talking about sex, we're talking about vaginas, you know, right. How are we going to pass this and talk about the business?
Yeah, so you had to get them past that before you could talk about the numbers.
Absolutely. And then we did that introduction in the next, you know, 10 successive meetings, and ultimately we were able to raise, you know, the money we needed to build the business. So that's wonderful. It doesn't always work that way. I've tried other things. I've tried to experiment, and you don't always succeed. But part of being an entrepreneur, regardless of what it is you're trying to accomplish, is, you know, you have to keep coming back.
Right. So that's when you knew that you'd found your leadership voice. So if you're a woman entrepreneur, how do we find our voice?
Well, the first thing, as I said earlier, is, you know, understanding what it is and why you might need it. Then I talk about those three steps, which is identifying somebody and studying them, sitting down and doing your inventory, and practicing. And what's important in the question that you just asked me is, you won't be successful every time. It is a process. You know, I go back because I think it's a great analogy to think about athletes. When you think about Olympic athletes, they might do 1,000, you know, tricks on the beam and fall off 50 of them, but they're still going back to figure out how they can make it better. And that's how I think the approach philosophically should be to leadership voice. Keep trying, identify the situations where communicating in a more effective way or more effective than you've done historically will make a difference. In many organizations, not all, you have the opportunity to work with a sponsor or a mentor, and different companies use different language, but that's also a great place to practice with someone who's further ahead in the organization, or if you're an entrepreneur, someone who's created an organization that you admire, and reaching out to them to say, will you sit down with me? My experience is that when you ask people for help and you're very specific and very focused on the amount of time you'll need, 9 times out of 10, people respond.
That's a very good point, Rachel. You have to, if you're looking for help, you definitely need to be aware of their commitment to you. So you have to be very specific in what you're asking and give them the amount of time that would be. Like, I need 10 minutes, so I need 15 minutes, so could you help me for an hour? And this is what I need. And then I find the same thing as you. 9 times out of 10 people will be more than happy to help them. I think most of the time women are afraid to ask. And that's a shame, because I ask anybody. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a woman, a guy, or if I think that person has something that will help me, I have no problem asking them. Because in return, I would do that for somebody else, and I'm sure you feel the same way.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've learned over time, I've been working for, you know, a very long time, that I would never reach out to somebody and say, can I pick your brain?
No.
I would reach out to somebody and say, listen, you've done this thing that I'm really interested in. I'm trying to do something similar. Would you be available for a 10-minute phone call Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday afternoon? And then you're not asking the person who you're asking a favor of to have to do much work.
Yes.
You're telling them what you need, when you want to do it. You know, you're happy to schedule it. And again, my experience is that people say yes. People say yes when you make it clear what you're asking for. And I just think that's a good lesson in communication, not just leadership, that being clear and being specific often leads to better results. And I think you can translate that into the context of a leadership voice. And when you're clear and when you're specific and you know what your objective is and you know what the ask is, you certainly increased your chances of being successful in whatever the initiative is that you're trying to accomplish.
So once we found our leadership voice, how can we use it?
I missed the first part of the question.
Sorry, once we find our leadership voice, once we practice this and we've got it down pat of what we want to say, how we want to say it, and we know our products, how do we use this leadership voice? How can we use it?
Well, being an entrepreneur, many opportunities to use it will present themselves. So on a daily basis, you will have the opportunity to practice, to try, because for entrepreneurs, many times you have to know how to do everything. You have to understand operations. You have to understand supply chain. You have to understand HR. You have to understand accounting. So you'll constantly be in a position where you're trying to sell either someone to come on board, to be your partner for that, to outsource, to give you money, to work with you, to be a vendor. So there's no shortage of opportunities to use it when you're an entrepreneur. Every day, multiple times a day, you have the opportunity to use it for better or worse.
Yeah, that's why it's so important to find your communication voice, because you have to use it, as you mentioned, in many different areas. And if you haven't developed it and you know where you're going, you're going to have difficulties as an entrepreneur, because very often you are the voice of the company, especially at the beginning. So it's something you need to work out.
And I think that's a really important point. For an entrepreneur, certainly at the early stage, you become interchangeable with the company. So if that's not always the case, but if that is the case, you are what people think of the company. What you communicate is what they think is the message of the company. How you present yourself is what they think reflect the values of the company. So it's critically important, as you point out, that when you are an entrepreneur, that's often your job. So if you haven't figured out how to package this, you know, there's often not someone else who knows how to do it. This is your baby. It is your mission. And as excited as you might be about it, it is still a business. And until you get people to exchange in commerce, exchange currency for your products or services, it's an expensive hobby. So you will have no shortage of opportunities to practice this as an entrepreneur. In fact, I'm sure sometimes you'll wish you didn't have as many opportunities.
Now, you've written a book on this subject, I believe.
So I was part of an anthology of business women who were asked to write about something that has had an impact in their ability to be successful. It's in a book called The Power of Transformation, the chapter that I referenced, which is How to Find Your Leadership Voice, because Oprah's is already taken. And it initially started because I had been asked to write an article for Inc. And the response was really exciting and strong. And I expanded it into a chapter for a book. I'm working on my second book, which is called Orgasmic Leadership, in which I interview dozens of entrepreneurs in the female health, wellness, reproductive health, sexual health space. And I talk a lot about how they figure out how to lead in a category where there's often so much discomfort.
Oh, that's fantastic. Do you happen to know Jessica Ching of Eve Medical?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay. She's one of my favorites, and she's, doing very well, but she had the same issue that you did, talk about raising money in a space that not too many people understood. Therefore, they didn't want to commit their funds to the company. And so she needed to find that same thing, the leadership voice in that industry.
And there are some real differences in raising money for categories that seem to be more sensitive in nature. There just is a difference. And one of the other reasons leadership voice is so critical is you have to be prepared for that. It is not the same as raising money for a tech company. It's not. No. I've spoken to so many entrepreneurs, and I certainly know Jessica, and I was introduced to her through a mutual colleague. So many people have trouble in this space. And often it's because there's a discomfort with the topic. So just to give you an example, when I would go in to talk about this arousal product, if the men in the room, and again, they largely were men in the room, hadn't heard of this, or their wife had never complained to them, or their partner, or their girlfriend, or whatever the case may be, they assumed it wasn't a problem. When in reality, oftentimes, women don't communicate about this because they don't have a language. We've grown up in an era with Viagra and the other erectile dysfunction drugs where we talk about bigger, longer, and bigger, and women don't think of intimacy as a performance activity.
Right.
But if you would go in and talk about something that still might be personal, like fertility,
yes,
which still has to do with sexuality, if there's a person in the room who has struggled with that, or their wife has struggled with that, or their cousin or their sister, they're much more comfortable with that topic because that feels medical.
Yes.
But even those have challenges. It is not a slam dunk. First of all, raising money is hard. There's a lot of people looking for a lot of money. Second, there has to be chemistry. And third, when you go into raise venture capital, there has to be a person in the partnership who's going to take this on and champion this to get it through their approval process.
Yeah. Well, that's been a very interesting conversation we've had on finding your communications voice. And thank you very much, Rachel, for all this input. I've certainly learned a lot. And you have a free gift for our listeners, I believe.
Yes, I'm going to be offering a free download of the chapter, How to Find Your Leadership Voice, where I talk about these concepts in a lot more detail.
Oh, thank you so much, because we're going to put this podcast on our website, fabfempreneurship.com, and we invite you to add your comments. If you've had trouble finding your leadership voice, download Rachel's book. And it's something we should all be thinking about as female entrepreneurs. I think women are still trying to find their leadership voice. We need to do exactly what you said, find out what our strengths are, and then find a way to interpret those strengths into a strong voice for our business, ourselves, because eventually down the road, your business is going to be more than a solopreneur, and you need to use your communication voices to hire people, even fire people, find the culture in your business. All that is related to your communications voice.
Absolutely.
So
thank you for taking the time to have me. I really enjoy speaking with you, and thank you for the thoughtful questions, and I wish you continued success with the podcast series.
Well, thank you very much, Rachel. We really enjoyed our chat today.